Okay, so let's have a look at what this document has to say. The toleration of those that differ from others in matter of self-religion is so agreeable to the gospel of Jesus Christ and to the genuine reason of mankind that it seems monstrous for men to be so blind as not to perceive the necessity and advantage of it. Okay, so this is a rather surprising beginning, because he says, oh, it's obvious, toleration, that is that the government does not get involved, it's obviously what Jesus wanted, and it's obviously a good idea. And people must have thought, what planet does he live on? There's a war in Germany, there's a huge conflict in France, we just finished a huge religious conflict in Britain. And here is John Locke saying, oh, it's obvious that it's a bad idea to persecute people who have different religious ideas. And so it's rather a strange way of looking at rather a strange way of beginning. He's sounding very confident. These are obviously good ideas. Nobody has followed them in the last couple of hundred years, but these are obviously good ideas. I will not here tax the pride and ambition of some, the passion and charitable zeal of others. In the next two sentences, which are a little difficult, he says, I'm not talking about cruel people or dishonest people or ambitious people. I'm only talking about honest people who have a real argument. Yeah. So he says, you know, of course, some people want to persecute people with different beliefs because they want power or because they want gold. We're not talking about them here. That's not the problem here. We're not going to talk about them. We're going to talk about the question of principle, line 12. I esteem it above all things necessary to distinguish exactly the business of civil government from that of religion, and to settle the just bounds that lie between the one and the other. So what is he going to do, John Locke? He's going to tell you, because he's a philosopher, they tell you things. He's going to tell you, what is the job of a government? What is the job of a church? What is the difference between the job of a church and the job of a government? And he thinks this will be extremely useful. And indeed, if we consider the American colonies with 6 or 7 or 25 different versions of Christianity, it would be handy to know, you know, are we going to put each other in prison? Or are we going to tolerate? If this be, line 14, if 13, if this be not done, there can be no end put to the controversies that will always be arising between those that have, or at least pretend to have, on the one side, a concernment for the interest of men's souls, and on the other side, a care of the commonwealth. Yeah, so we have to solve this problem, because if we don't, the church will always be arguing with the government. They will not agree, what is your job, what is my job? And so, because he's a philosopher, he's going to begin by definitions, you know, like, you know, come on, feel back. What is the commonwealth? The commonwealth seems to me to be a society of men constituted only for the procuring, preserving, advancing of their own civil interests. Civil interests I call life, liberty, health, indolency of body, and the possession of outward things such as money, lands, houses, furniture, and the like. Okay, so why am I in a society, according to John Locke? Because I want life and freedom and property. And I want to defend these. I want to defend my life, my freedom, and my property. We can immediately see that John Locke is writing for the... So what the fuck is this? Excuse my French. Okay. We can immediately see that he is writing for the elite, First of all, the majority of the population cannot read, so he's not writing for them. But also, the majority of the population has no property, so they're not going to be very interested in his. So he's writing for the elite, but the elite has many different ideas on what should be done. So let's have a look at it. So what he's going to do is, first of all, he's going to say, what should governments do? Secondly, what should governments not do? C'est la fin de la première page. Oh, he continues. From line 88 on, he will say, okay, so I have defined a government and I've said what a government should do and what a government should not do. And from line 88 on, he's going to say, okay, so what is a church? And what should a church do? And what should a church not do? He continues much more, of course, but those are the most important sections at the beginning. Now let me see if I can do what I was intending to do here with a bit of luck. I found a very, very short explanation of this on YouTube, so I thought, you know, why should I do the work if YouTube would do the work for me? It's only an introduction, but it's actually really pretty useful. Now, I'm a great believer in YouTube, but of course you have to be careful because there's also a lot of nonsense, very often if the document is made by a university, it's usually serious, and so that's what I recommend. Interestingly enough, not that one. Interestingly enough, the Open University produced one, which I can't find anymore, of course. Okay, well, let's try this one.
In the 17th century, heretics and nonconformists risked horrific torture and a painful death. John Locke, or his man himself, argued much greater toleration of religious diversity.
Okay, so we've not got the. I need to define the screen differently. I can see the screen and you can't. That's not good, is it? So why? Oh well.
In the 17th century, heretics and nonconformists risked horrific torture and a painful death. John Locke, a religious man himself, argued for much greater toleration of religious diversity. To start with, he pointed out that those who forced others to recant their beliefs by threatening them with red-hot pokers and thumbscrews could hardly be said to be acting out of Christian charity. Also, if these persecutors really wanted to save souls, they ought to focus on sinners, not on people quibbling over the interpretation of scriptures. But he had a better argument than these. Using force to change beliefs is irrational. That's because no threat can persuade anyone to believe something that they think is false. They might say they believe in your God to save themselves from torture or being burnt at the stake, but you won't change their actual beliefs that way. We can't just choose what we believe as a matter of convenience. So if the point of your threat is to achieve a genuine religious conversion, it just won't work. That was the basis of his case for religious toleration. But Locke wasn't as tolerant as you might expect. He didn't tolerate Catholics or atheists. Catholics weren't to be trusted because they were enthralled to the Pope, a foreign power. And atheists couldn't be trusted because they had no holy book in which to swear an oath, and no fear of divine retribution.
That was the one that I wanted now. Oh yeah, of course, yeah.
John Locke was a hugely influential English philosopher of the 17th century, whose ideas, particularly in the realm of political philosophy, are still hugely relevant today.
Okay, no. I'm having problems with the screen. Okay, so it's only 2 minutes long. Because it's the BBC and the Open University, you can say, oh, it's serious stuff, yeah. I say that because I found another video about John Locke, which complete nonsense from the beginning to the end. So you can find a lot of nonsense as well. But in general, if it's produced by a real university, it's pretty handy. Now, even in the short summary that you get in that video, you can see that John Locke is a Protestant. Very clearly a Protestant, because he says, what should you do if somebody has a wrong idea about religion? You should persuade them. You should have an argument and give your reasons, and they give their reasons, and you should persuade them. This is a completely Protestant idea. Yeah? The Catholic idea is not about argument and so on. It's there's no problem. God told the Pope, and the Pope told the Bishop, and the Bishop told the priest. Ask the priest. You have a problem. Ask the priest. That's how you do it. Yeah. I remember I was brought up a Catholic, a serious Catholic, and when I was 12 years old, I bought a Bible, and my mother was very unhappy because you're not supposed to buy a Bible in traditional Catholicism. The priest reads the Bible and tells you what it means. Yeah, I bought my own Bible, and my mother was not so happy about this. You will end up a Protestant. God, there you go. So John Locke is being very clear about the fact that he is clearly a Protestant. I have another extract I want to look briefly to you. No, let's do a little bit. Let's look a little bit more at the first page, line 33. First, because the care of souls is not committed to the civil magistrates any more than to other men. It is not committed unto him, I say, by God, because it appears not that God has ever given any such authority to one man over another as to compel anyone to his religion. Nor can any such power be invested in the magistrate by the consent of the people. Because no man can so far abandon the care of his own salvation as blindly to leave it to the choice of any other, whether prince or subject, to prescribe to him what faith or worship he shall embrace. For no man can, if he would, conform his faith to the dictates of another. All the life and power of true religion consists in the inward and full persuasion of the mind, and faith is not faith without believing. Now here, Locke is showing what are his religious priorities. Because within Christianity, there are three key priorities which you can choose. One of them is the importance of ritual. And Catholicism thinks that ritual is very important. You must go to church every Sunday. You must go to confession regularly. If you haven't been baptized, this is a terrible problem. Yeah, the ritual, yeah? So you might be the most kind and generous person in the world. If you haven't been baptized, that's a terrible problem in Catholic ideology. So this is what, if you like, the priority for ritual. This is why we Catholics, we have sacraments. How many sacraments do we have? Can you remember? Thank you, yes. Let's see, we could do that. give me your list.
Is getting married a sacrament?
Yes.
So there is, but I have got it in
French. Okay, I'll translate.
La première communion.
First communion.
La confirmation.
Confirmation. Baptism. Baptism, yes.
Le mariage.
Marriage.
Eucharistie.
We said that one, communion.
Yeah.
celebrate communion. There's two. There's more. Anybody more sacraments? Anybody? Vous allez tous en enfer, vous autres. Yes. That's right. Yeah. Well, this is one which we used to call extreme unction, and now it's called the sacrament of the sick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ordination, when you become a priest. Yeah. And there's one more, confession. Confession. There are seven sacraments. So this priority is, what is it? One of the most important things is ritual. A second possibility in Christianity, the most important thing is behaviour. Yeah. Are you good to people? Are you generous? Are you kind? Are you cruel? Yeah. You have to do good things and avoid bad things. That's another priority. And the third priority is what we call pietism. The most important thing is faith. For example, today, many of the evangelical churches, which are influential in the United States and in Brazil, the most important thing is faith. So you're generous and kind, that's no good, that's not interesting. Yeah, is your faith solid? Yeah. So these are three possible, and John Locke is showing that what is important to him is faith. Now, this importance of faith is a debate inside Christianity, and it's a debate inside Protestantism. For example, how many people here were baptized? Okay. Did they ask your opinion before you were baptized? No, they didn't. So, this is very, very strange, because John Locke is going to say faith is something that he just said, you must choose it freely. If you do not choose it freely, it's not true religion. And yet, the Church of England, which he belongs to, defended infant baptism. This was an argument within Protestants. For example, Baptists, like Martin Luther King, they often choose adult baptism. Yeah, you should be baptized as an adult, because then you have freely chosen. Whereas the Catholics and quite a lot of Protestants say, no, you must baptize babies. Indeed, for the Catholics, if babies are not baptized, it's a terrible problem, because what if they die? Oh my God, if they die. In fact, the Catholics have thought about this very carefully, and there is a special place in Catholic theology where you go if you're a baby and you die before you're baptized. You know how it works. If you're not alive, then if you've been very good, you go to heaven. Yeah. If you've been really bad, you go to hell. If you've been half good and half bad, you have to wait for a while in purgatory. But there's another place for people who were not close to Jesus, but it wasn't their fault, like dead babies. This is called, somebody can show us? Yeah? No, le purgatoire is the intermediate place where you go if you had a few sins, but not too many. No, en français, c'est les limbes. D'ailleurs, on l'utilise dans l'expression courante, dans les limbes. This is limbo, and this is the place where babies go, according to Catholic theologians. Spoiler, other religions are available. Okay, so limbo is the... So you can see that the baptism is really, really important. And for a long time in the Catholic Church, and if your child was not baptized, then they could not be buried in the churchyard. They could not be buried in the Holy Land. Indeed, when I was young, they taught you, see, normally you need a priest to baptize somebody. Only priests can baptize. Except if you have a child which is dying, any Catholic can baptize. In an emergency, any Catholic is allowed to baptize. So I mean, these are obviously, the people spent centuries thinking of solutions to these problems, which today we generally don't tend to think are tremendously important. So certainly John Locke is showing that his view of religion is very much Protestant. And so there he says in line 33, the government's job is not to look after your soul. Okay, so he's just saying it. Let's go to a different section over the page in 88. No, but first of all, before we do that, let me tell you a few things about John Locke. He was born in 1632, so when he was 10 years old, there was a civil war. The civil war between Parliament and the King. Parliament supported by the more radical Protestants. The King supported by the more traditionalist Anglicans and Catholics. Civil wars are very, obviously, very violent things. They're also very political things. Nobody is neutral in a civil war. You know, in normal life, like today, some people have a political opinions. I'm not really interested in politics. During a civil war, nobody is not interested in politics because you're in the village and the king's army arrive and you have to help them or fight them. And you could try to be neutral, good luck. So it's an extremely political time, and indeed during the Civil War there were huge numbers of new political groups and new religious groups which were born, very often led by women. It was a time when women were extremely important in political leadership. So this happened when he was 10 years old. He studied in Oxford. He was in favour of Parliament and against the King. And as James II became more and more interested in absolutism, that's why Parliament sacked him, John Locke went off to the Netherlands, and he only came back after the Glorious Revolution. When he wrote this letter, the conflict was continuing on the continent and had been going on in Britain for a long time. As you can see, John Locke says, the government should not put people in prison for religious differences. And I've been showing you, Mary was executing Protestants, Elizabeth was executing Catholics, we had a civil war. So John Locke's ideas were not the ideas which had dominated the previous century. Okay, so now let's continue from line 88. Let us now consider what a church is. Now, the whole style of the entire document is very typical of an Enlightenment philosopher. So, let us define what is a church. This is very cheeky. This is very impertinent. 200 years earlier, everybody would have said to John Locke, shut up, the Pope will tell you what a church is. It's not your job is not to think, what is religion? What should religion do? No, stop it. We know what religion should do. God told the Pope, and the Pope told the bishops, and the bishops will tell you, shut up. Yeah. And so the whole idea of the Enlightenment is, let's analyse things which before nobody was thinking about. So, for example, Adam Smith, the great Enlightenment economist, he will write a book called The Wealth of Nations, La Richesse des Nations, and he will say, why are some countries rich and some countries poor? This is an Enlightenment idea. Why? Previously, 200 years earlier, why are some countries rich? Because God likes them. Why are some countries poor? Because God doesn't like them. Stop asking questions. So this is the whole Enlightenment, is that a whole load of questions which we never asked are now questions. And Adam Smith invents economics. And John Locke invents the idea of government toleration. Let us now consider what a church is. A church, then, I take to be a voluntary society of men, line 89, joining themselves together of their own accord in order to the public worshipping of God in such a manner as they judge acceptable to him and effectual to the salvation of their souls. I say, a church is a free and voluntary society. Nobody is born a member of any church. Otherwise, the religion of parents would descend under children. by the same right of inheritance as their temporal estates. And everyone would hold his faith by the same tenure he does his lands, than which nothing can be imagined more absurd. Thus, therefore, that matter stands, no man by nature is bound unto any particular church or sect, but everyone joins himself voluntarily to that society in which he believes he has found that profession and worship which is truly acceptable to God. So again, completely Protestant. Individuals choose the church. The traditional idea is not that at all. It's that you join the church when you are a baby, because you are baptized. The traditional view is that the relationship to God is a collective relationship. The church, in Catholic ideas, the church is all Catholics. The church is not the priest and the bishop, the church is all Catholics. It's a collective relationship with God. The Protestant idea, no, an individual relationship with God. And this is very, very closely linked to the rise of capitalism. Now, people often say very negative things about capitalism today, very often with very good reason, but it was a lot better than feudalism. Yeah, feudalism was no fun at all. And indeed, England is the first capitalist country, and in France, for 300 years, you will still have regular famines, and in England, there will be no famines after 1730, because from the point of view of eating, capitalism is better than feudalism. Although, you know, it is often criticized as well. Okay, so that's what he's going for. He's going for this idea that it's all about free will and rational thinking. This is what religion is about. It's about choosing the best. Which is the best bank to put my savings in? Which is the best religion to believe in? It's the same kind of idea. Yeah, it's a very individual view. And also, he shows that, we each have our own opinion. You're going to be a Baptist, and you're going to be a Methodist, and you're going to be a Quaker, because you believe that this is what God wants. And you believe that this is what God wants, and you believe, I'm John Locke, I don't know which is the true religion. I just think that the government should leave the question alone. So that's what he's going to. Let's continue a little bit further on. Line 103. It follows now that we consider what is the power of this church, and unto what laws it is subject. For as much as no society, how free soever, or upon whatsoever slight occasion instituted, no church or company, I say, can in the least subsist and hold together, but will presently dissolve and break to pieces unless it be regulated by some laws. And the members all consent to observe some order. Place and time of meeting must be agreed on. Rules for admitting and excluding members must be established. Distinction of officers and putting things into a regular course and such like cannot be omitted. But since the joining together of several members into this church society, as has already been demonstrated, is absolutely free and spontaneous, it necessarily follows that the right of making its laws can belong to none but the society itself, or at least, which is the same thing, to those whom the society by common consent has authorized thereunto. So he's looking at the question of a church, any church, you know, the Quakers, the Baptists, the Southern Baptist, the Southwestern Baptist. If you go to the United States, you see they have a number of different Protestant churches. Incredible. I was in Nashville in Tennessee, and I wanted to see a musical comedy. So we went to a local musical comedy, and as we watched it, we realized it was the story of why this particular group of a few hundred Baptists separated from the general Southern Baptism. It was a religious musical comedy. This is America. Yeah? And it was all about justifying. The same thing in Scotland. In Scotland, they have lots of different Protestant churches. Very often, very strict. You know, let's not do anything on a Sunday. And things like that. Yeah, so a lot of different things. So here he's asking the question. So who makes the rules for a church? Whose job is it to make rules for the church? Is it the government's job? Well, we've seen that he thinks it's not the government's job. Although for hundreds of years the government has been involved, he says no. The rules for the church can only be made by the members of the church. The Quakers should decide the rules for the Quakers. The Baptists should decide the rule for the Baptists. The Arminians should decide the rule, etc. Now, to us, this seems not very controversial. It's very controversial at the time because what is the Catholic view? Who makes the rules for the church in the Catholic view? Almost.
God.
God, yeah. The rules for the church come from God because the Pope talks le pape la lose justice de Dieu. Okay, so this is a very, very, very Protestant. The Catholic idea is really that the rules come from God. This is one of the reasons why the Catholic Church is not as flexible as Protestant churches. For example, in the Church of England today, a quarter of the priests are women. 25% of Church of England vicars are women. However, in the Catholic Church, although there is a lot more responsibility for women in the Catholic Church today compared with 50 years ago, if you go to church today, if you receive communion, you might receive it from a woman, but she will not be a priest. The idea of being a priest, the Catholics, it's difficult to be flexible if you think your rules came from God. Yeah, and so that's it. And so John Locke is presenting this idea, first of all, that the rules do not come from God, and secondly, that the rules should not be decided by anybody outside this particular church. And so the government should not say, Baptists, you can't do that. But this, in fact, was... Electricity is gone. Okay. Wow. I don't think I need it anymore. This has not been the history. One of the slides which I did not show you was one of the decisions of Edward. Edward was like 13 years old, so it was his advisors. But when Edward became king, they decided that they were going to establish a Protestant church. But they had a problem that some people were still Catholics, some people were much more radical Protestants. There were 100 ideas. Said, okay, we're going to write the Book of Common Prayer. Every church in the country must use this prayer book. And that was one of a very important part of the government deciding what was right in religion and what was wrong. When Elizabeth came along and wanted to stabilize the situation, she brought out a new edition of the Book of Common Prayer. However, what was clever about Elizabeth is that the Book of Common Prayer under Elizabeth was rather ambiguous. It did not go into great detail about what you must believe. It used ambiguous language because Elizabeth's intention was to stabilize the situation, reduce the conflicts. So after many, many examples where the government decided what the rules of the church were, John Locke says, no, the government must not do it, only the members of the church must do it. Line 115. Some perhaps may object that no such society can be said to be a true church unless if it have in it a bishop or presbyter with ruling authority derived from the very apostles and continued down unto the present time by an uninterrupted succession. So John Locke is now going to answer the objection put forward by Catholics. Because the Catholics say, what is this nonsense? The Catholic Church is the true church. Because the Pope, and the Pope before him, we go right back to Saint Peter. And where did Saint Peter, how did Saint Peter get the job? Anybody remember? How did Saint Peter get the job? Did he go for a speed dating, job dating? Did he find it in L'Expansion, the Financial Times? Do you know, anybody know, how did Saint Peter get the job as first Pope? He got the job direct from Jesus. Huh? In fact, his name before this was Simon, and he was called Peter because in Latin, Peter is very close to Petra, which means rock, and Jesus in the Bible. It might not be true. In the Bible, Jesus says, your name is Peter. I said, well, I'm Simon. No, I'm changing your name. Your name is now Peter, and on this rock, I will build my church. You are the rock. So Jesus hired Saint Peter. The salary is not good, but the retirement benefits are excellent. Jesus hired Peter as first pope. And so, according to the Catholics, every pope got the job because they followed the pope before them. And so today, the only true church is the Catholic Church because it has a tradition going back to Jesus. Alors, ils exagèrent un peu parce qu'il y a eu des moments où il y avait trois papes qui s'entretuaient, passons, une pape qui est une femme, passons, on va oublier tout ça. So that's the idea. Now, obviously, John Locke will not, and indeed, so the Catholic Church says the authority of the Pope goes back to the apostles. And indeed, the in Catholic Mass you say, I believe in one holy apostolic church. Dans le credo, on dit, I believe in one holy and apostolic church. Apostolic, that means we go back to the apostles. And so the Protestant, from a Catholic point of view, Protestants are bizarre people who haven't noticed that we go back to Jesus. We go back to Jesus, yeah. What can you do? Okay. So what does John Locke answer to these people? To these I answer. In the first place, let them show me the edict by which Christ has imposed that law upon his church. And let not any man think me impertinent if in a thing of this consequence I require that the terms of that edict be very express and positive. For the promise he has made us that wheresoever two or three are gathered together in his name, he will be in the midst of them, Matthew 18:20, seems to imply the contrary. Whether such an assembly wants anything necessary to a true church, pray do you consider. Certain I am that nothing can be there wanting unto the salvation of souls, which is sufficient for our purposes. So, on the one hand, you have the Catholic position, which says, Jesus gave the job to Peter, it says in the Bible. So, the Pope is the boss, and we are the only people who've got a Pope, so we're the true church. And John Locke says, because the Protestants' idea was, the church has lost Christianity. The church has gone the wrong way, so we need a new church. Now, we need a new church to get rid of corruption. We need a new church because I have better theology. We need a new church because capitalism suits us better. You know, there are 100 reasons. Yeah? And so what John Locke is saying is that, well, okay, Jesus said this thing to Peter, okay. Notice that for Locke, what is written in the Bible is true. Yeah, we're not changing that. Yeah. However, Jesus also says, he says this in Matthew, every time that two or three people get together in the name of Jesus, I am with them. That's what Jesus said. And for John Locke, this seems like anybody can be a church. Yeah? It seems like anybody can do it. Yeah? Yeah. One of the wonderful things about the Bible is it's very ambiguous. This is normal. If you want a book to be influential for 2,000 years, it must be ambiguous because the world keeps changing. And so the Bible has been used by people fighting against slavery, and the Bible has been used by people owning slaves. Yeah? The Bible was used in the First World War. The Bible was used by the Germans and by the English and by the French. Everybody, you know, God is on our side. Maybe. And so it's all rather ambiguous. Okay, well, listen, it's not quite time, but that's enough for me. Thank you for listening to so carefully. I hope you got some idea of what he's doing. And next week we will be looking at somebody who is more modern.